This podcast is intended as healthcare practitioner education only and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
So we start off with the usual, and then because one size doesn't fit all, we can go to things such as the thyroid extract or T3. So it depends on how the person is responding. So I'd start off with levothyroxine.
I think thyroxine for the majority of people is sufficient. I know some people will, you know, anecdotally say that they feel better on a thyroid extract, for example. But I think most of the time, again, if you're using thyroxine and we're reducing all those inflammatory sort of interferences, it generally works quite well. Those people that need that little bit of extra T3, for example, again, I go, well, why are they not converting properly?
But there definitely is a subset of patients that don't do well on T4 alone, particularly that, you know, they can have depression, anxiety, fatigue, weight gain, you know, brain fog. And so they're looking at more, you know, analysing T3, which makes perfect sense to me because T3 is that active with thyroid hormone. Some people can't convert. There are people that have polymorphisms against the deiodinized enzymes that convert T4 to T3. So it doesn't matter how much T4 you give these patients, they're going to struggle.
This is BioConcepts Between Clinical Minds, the podcast that's open-minded enough to take in all sides of a clinical story. You'll hear from researchers, doctors, naturopaths, nutritionists, and patients. We look at common clinical presentations through a different lens. It's open, frank, and sometimes controversial. Nothing is off limits. Will it change the way you treat? We'll leave that up to you. In season 3 of BioConcepts Between Clinical Minds, we look at thyroid health. We talk to experts in the field who will take you into their clinics and share their experience. I'm Tony Chambers, and this is BioConcepts Between Clinical Minds. In this episode of Between Clinical Minds, we continue the conversation, this time on working alongside medications with pharmacist James Jensen, thyroid specialist naturopath Tara Nelson, and integrative GP Dr. Aparna Hegde. The prescription and use of thyroid medications can be controversial, and working alongside them with nutrients and herbs must be carefully considered. Integrative GP Aparna Hegde.
So we start off with the usual, and then because one size doesn't fit all, we can go to things such as the thyroid extract or T3. So it depends on how the person is responding. So I'd start off with levothyroxine, and these days there's the medication that doesn't need to be kept refrigerated. It still needs to be taken empty stomach first thing in the morning. And with all of these things, normally the testing is done 4 to 6 weeks after the change, either introduction of medication or change of medication. And then depending on the numbers and how the person is feeling, because we don't just treat the numbers, and change depending on what they come with as well, because some have already come in with the thyroid extract. But there is controversy on the use of porcine in autoimmune, because essentially you're putting in thyroglobulin and thyroid peroxidase, so you might actually make the antibody response worse because you're putting in more antigens.
How do you deal with the controversy?
You can get extracts that are non-porcine. So you can get T3, T4, which is basically body identical that isn't porcine.
So do you prefer to use those ones?
In autoimmune, I tend to use those ones, unless people have already come and they kind of say, this is what works for me, in which case I don't change things.
And regarding the medication versus nutrients, where do you normally start? Or it depends obviously on the patient picture.
So always to optimise what's happening first. So nutrition, what they're doing in their lifestyle, you know, do the hard work before the medication. Sometimes you have to use the medication for a short period of time to kickstart them. They're so dysfunctional in their thyroid that you actually have to stop the thyroid from working for a little while and take over. And it depends, I guess, on where in that pathway they are. But you can't substitute a pill for lifestyle.
And thyroxine has a half-life of 7 days, for example. Obviously, our audience is a combination of integrative doctors like yourself, but also naturopaths and nutritionists. How would you suggest that the non-medical professionals amongst us prescribe alongside those medications safely?
So, again, the good thing about thyroxine having such a long half-life is that there's a steady state, and if people miss medications or they take too much, or it ultimately kind of levels out. So it actually makes prescribing with a long half-life easier in a sense, because you're kind of getting a level out of everything else. So as long as it's not just the start of it or the start of a change, either increase or decrease, 1 to 2 weeks of someone being on a certain amount of thyroxine, you're okay to prescribe other things along with it.
I guess the other thing is, what would be your advice to nutritionists and naturopaths about how best to work alongside endocrinologists in this context?
So the thing I think is, endos, they work on medication and they work on the principle of if something is not depleted, then, or the numbers are within a bell curve, then it doesn't actually make sense to treat it. But where they can come at it, and where functional medicine comes at it, is, hey, isn't lifestyle and optimizing health paramount in any condition? It is. So that's how I think they work with it. It's to get the mind and the body working as best as it can. So that makes the endo's job a lot easier.
James Jensen is a pharmacist and a nutritionist, and he says when thyroxine doesn't work, there's usually a reason.
I think thyroxine for the majority of people is sufficient. I know some people will, you know, anecdotally say that they feel better on a thyroid extract, for example. But I think most of the time, again, if you're using thyroxine and we're reducing all those inflammatory sort of interferences, it generally works quite well. Those people that need that little bit of extra T3, for example, again, I go, well, why are they not converting properly? So, you know, are there deficiencies that are in the way, or is it that their body's under a significant amount of stress and simply just dumping more thyroid hormone into a body that's under stress often doesn't yield better results? What we sometimes see is people, they might have low levels of T3, they might start T3 and they'll initially feel much better, but then because the underlying inflammation hasn't been addressed, they'll often start to go backwards. So when that happens, when people, we see them increasing their dose or something and they go, that works, but now it's not and I haven't changed anything else, that's where I really start to consider, you know, that cellular hypothyroidism and the cell danger response.
Once a patient is on it, how easy is it for them to come off it? As in, once you've looked at the underlying cause and you resolve the inflammation, can the patient generally come off the thyroxine?
It really depends how far down, I guess, that autoimmune pathway. So once, you know, often they'll reach a point where their thyroid has been so damaged that they can't just go off medication. I think by the time, I remember reading once in one of the papers, by the time someone's TSH is elevated and their T4 is low, the thyroid's probably damaged to, you know, roughly a percentage of about 90%. So that to me says that by the time they're reaching that point, that I guess they will always need some level of T4.
Under what circumstances could they come off the medications?
If we catch people early enough, you know, we can reduce their medication. And I've had patients that have come to me and they've said, I used to be on thyroxine. I ran out of my script and I actually didn't feel any better off it. So they just didn't renew the prescription. Mm-hmm. And to me, that tells me that obviously, yes, there might have been some, you know, requirement for some time at it, but whatever the driver, whatever that inflammation was, mm-hmm. probably resolved.
And given thyroxine's half-life, which is, you know, 7 days, for example, how do we prescribe alongside that as naturopaths and nutritionists?
Well, there's some people that will, for example, we've got some GPs locally that will prescribe T4 and they'll do it in big doses. So they might tell them that they can take, you know, even something like 200 micrograms sort of a couple of days a week and sort of let it float along. I generally get people to sort of do the daily dosing unless they feel like it works better in another way. Mm-hmm. So daily dosing, I think, first thing in the morning and away from any other supplements, because thyroxine will bind to quite a lot of other things. So, you know, things like zinc and calcium, mm-hmm. iron, for example, it will bind to. Mm-hmm. So always on an empty stomach and first thing in the morning. And, you know, that also raises another point that often we'll see that, for example, certain things like if you've got low stomach acid, for example, you're going to have a harder time activating and absorbing things like thyroxine. Mm. So if you're doing something like a gut protocol where you're improving their digestion, you might actually find that they need to lower their dose. So if you feel like the patient's moving into a bit more of a hyperthyroid state, it could be that the good work that you've done means that they actually need to reduce their dose. Mm. So again, just like listening to the patient, talking to them about their symptoms. And even certain bacteria can bind to thyroxine and deactivate it as well. So I find once you do a few of those gut protocols, that will often lend to changing the dose.
And what are your thoughts or practice of using T3? Did mention it before that it doesn't normally help unless you've looked at the drivers and addressed the drivers. But can you tell me a little bit more about using T3?
Yeah, so I think most people that end up on T3 from my point of view, they're often people that have seen some sort of integrative doctor or GP or, you know, functional GP. Mm-hmm. So they might be put on it and often they'll just keep increasing their dose and things like that. So they might start with a small dose and they'll generally take it sort of, you know, once to twice a day. And what we'll often find is, again, as we start to address those root causes, they often are able to reduce that dosing or come off it altogether. So they're things that I always consider and talk to the patient about if they are on something like T3.
Tara Nelson is a thyroid specialist naturopath and she says T3 is a better option for many patients.
I think from the 70s, we've just had this really sort of, you know, doctrinated T4 or synthyroid when it first came out in the 70s is this is the thyroid algorithm. We test TSH and maybe test T4, but we add in T4 until TSH is normalized. And that's what we've been focusing on for so long. But there definitely is a subset of patients that don't do well on T4 alone, particularly, you know, they can have depression, anxiety, fatigue, weight gain, you know, brain fog. And so they're looking at more, you know, analyzing T3, which makes perfect sense to me because T3 is that active with thyroid hormone. Some people can't convert. There are people that have polymorphisms against the deiodinized enzymes that convert T4 to T3. So it doesn't matter how much T4 you give these patients, they're going to struggle. And then so before actually the 1970s, before T4 became that, you know, the medical algorithm of treating, a lot of patients were taking a combination or NDT, natural desiccated thyroid from pig thyroid that contained, the correct amounts of T4 and T3. Mm. And when you think about the thyroid gland, it does produce around 96% T4 and around 7% T3. So that is that combination. Mm. And the theory is that there's T3 you know, we need to have some T3 there to maintain this, you know, ongoing circulatory T3 levels. And yeah, in some patients that just, yeah, have issues converting or issues uptaking, that T4 can, yeah, they just don't do well. And I see that across the board so many times in my clinic with patients coming in on the T4.
Can I just go back to the history, why the change from the desiccated thyroid with that kind of balance of the two?
There wasn't a lot of, you know, the book was really interesting. There wasn't a lot of research, you know, or clinical data done. It was just showing that, you know, T4 monotherapy actually improves the TSH. And this is what we want to do. You know, when we improve the TSH, patients are euthyroid and T4 does it extremely well, which it does. It does that. But I think it misses so many steps in that thyroid physiology. And I think there were issues. One of the issues around NDT, maybe back in the time, I think it's a little bit more regulated now, is that, you know, they weren't assured of the quality. So, you know, how these pigs were raised, you know, what they ate, it kind of makes sense. I think now we have more testing procedures. You know, T3 can be added. I like NDT. I like as a, you know, set point of let's try this first. If you're on T4 and you're not doing well, well, let's try a combination. But there's tetroxine, which is a, you know, a synthetic form of T3 that can be added in alongside T4. There's all different ways of prescribing it. You can compound it. You have a compounding pharmacy that compounds T4 and T3 together. There's different ways of getting it in. But yeah, I think they stopped sort of NDT because of the quality. My hope, to be honest, is that one day it'll become the normal prescription. Mm-hmm. We will get in both because the thyroid gland produces T4 and T3. It doesn't just produce T4. Yes, it's predominant, but it has to be converted. And I think if we're looking at the long-term future treatment of hypothyroidism, I think we're going to see more combination therapy being prescribed once it gets out there. Because it, you know, literally that medical algorithm, and it's the same with thyroid cancers and thyroid nodules. There's no radiofrequency ablation in there yet. There's no molecular testing for thyroid nodules yet, which they're doing in other countries. Our medical algorithm has stayed the same for years, and it needs a shake-up because I think there are so many. You know, how many thyroid patients do we see in clinic that say that doctors don't listen to me? They only test TSH. They won't test that. I still have symptoms despite being on T4. This has been going, it's nothing new. It's been going on for years and years. So I think in my hope, we're going to start to see more a combination, a little bit of T3. And if you are, you've got mostly T4 and a little bit of T3, it's about a 3-to-1 ratio. For those people particularly that need it, that, you know, their gland for whatever reason is struggling to produce thyroid hormones, and I think that's going to hopefully, fingers crossed, become the mainstay. But for now, it's those patients that come in that, you know, I've worked on their drivers and triggers, I've changed their diet and their lifestyle, I've done everything I can, and they're still struggling. So particularly post-thyroidectomy, atrophic thyroiditis when their ultrasound is showing a very shriveled up atrophy thyroid. And for those subset of patients that we do everything well for them and they're just really struggling on T4, then I'll say, look, okay, the next step is to let's add some T3 in. And I do feel too, because T3 has a very short half-life, it can spike, you know, spike those T3 levels really fast. T4 is quite a longer half-life. You know, it needs to be done under guidance and care. It can cause hyperthyroid symptoms. The higher the cortisol and the lower the cortisol seems to make people more sensitive. So we've got to come in as practitioners and definitely do the gut and the adrenal and the stress and all that and HPA dysfunction work before. You know, it's not just as simple as that pill, as we know.
Yeah. And I guess while we're talking about the medical algorithm, can we talk about the TSH testing and actually you've found some really good recent studies, haven't you, where maybe the tide's turning on only testing TSH or testing it as the sole analyte to diagnose thyroid disorders?
So it's really, yeah, it's really exciting for them to, you know, for this Medscape that published this interview with Dr. Bianco, and then this other endocrinologist in Australia has actually, yeah, said, yes, I agree with this. And I think it's coming from patients. You know, it's being driven by patients going to their endocrinologists, going to their doctors and saying, I just don't feel right. And they're like, well, your TSH is normal. You're euthyroid. You know, your T4 is up in the upper ranges. I don't know what else to do for you. Well, we need to look beyond that. And this is what this new research is saying. We need to look beyond TSH and T4. Mm-hmm. And let's test T3, which is so exciting. It's going to take a while to filter down to everyone. Mm. But I think it's an important one to share.
James Jensen says it's not just thyroid medications that practitioners must know how to work with.
So often people that will, for example, if they do have hypothyroidism, often they'll have insulin resistance or type 2 diabetes. So we'll often see them being prescribed things like metformin. And I find that metformin can also disrupt thyroid function and TSH in particular. Mm-hmm. I haven't researched that thoroughly, but it's definitely something that I've seen. You might see someone's thyroid moving along quite nicely, then they'll start something like metformin and it will, you'll start to see the thyroid change a little bit. So whether that's an adaptive change, due to the fact that they're more insulin sensitive, which has reduced inflammation, which is then altered the way the thyroid's functioning, or if it's just simply the way that metformin works on the microbiome as well, might be creating positive changes. Mm. Commonly, again, to talk about, things like diuretics. So furosemide we'll often see, which is used for like fluid retention. Again, the fluid retention might be a symptom of hypothyroidism, but they might be put on something like furosemide, which can then, again, it's, I guess, more or less like treating the symptoms. But furosemide can definitely interact with thyroid function. And for those people that lithium is a really common one that we'll see, like lithium, which is, used for different states of, any sort of mental health condition, that lithium definitely interacts with thyroid medications and definitely interacts with thyroid function.
And what about the things that we might bring in with these medications? Is there anything that we might bring in like herbs or nutrients that might bring in and interact with those medications?
I think anything that changes the way the microbiome functions can potentially alter thyroxine absorption. So that's what I was, talking about. Whenever you're doing any sort of those gut protocols, we always keep any supplements separate from thyroxine, at least 2 hours apart. But when we are working on the gut and getting the gut better, you'll often see an increased absorption of those medications. So I'm always mindful that, if they're, we're doing something like that, that there's likely going to be a positive change and a reduction in the dose that they require. So again, just keeping up to date with the patient and I guess warning them from the get-go that, as we improve the way your body's functioning, it might actually need to lower your dose.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Any other medications that you'd like to mention?
Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. Mm-hmm. So, they're notorious for creating things like leaky gut as well. Mm-hmm. So whether that be like ibuprofen or naproxen or meloxicam, they're notorious for creating or exacerbating leaky gut or, in more severe cases, creating ulcerations. So again, sometimes the thing that people are taking to reduce their inflammation is equally causing a different type of inflammation, which again, if we know that inflammation is going to disrupt thyroid signaling and conversion, those medications definitely have a potential to interact with the thyroid as well.
And so what do you do in that case? Because you can't, if the person's in pain, you don't want to take them off those, but if they're one of the driving factors, how do you manage that situation?
So usually I will try and switch them over to anti-inflammatory compounds, which are, more natural. So whether it be your turmeric or curcumin, again, often when you do some of the gut healing things, turmeric, glutamine, zinc carnosine, as you're able to heal that gut, often that reduces, if there is leaky gut due to those medications, we can find that the better the gut is, the less systemic inflammation and less pain that they have. So they can often lower those doses. And at least I think, if we're doing something to heal the gut whilst they're on them, I think they're going to be better off than just taking those medications by themselves.
And I guess you're kind of in a unique position because you're a pharmacist as well as a naturopath. But as far as talking to doctors are concerned and talking to endocrinologists, do you have any advice for, those of us who don't have your medical side of the training as to how we can best communicate and talk to endocrinologists in this space?
Yeah, I would say it's probably one of the toughest areas for anyone that works in this space to navigate. Mm-hmm. I think firstly, understanding that they're trained a certain way, and we might have different ideas and thoughts. So it's really, really important to, I guess, be respectful and mindful of that they're just doing exactly what they're trained to do. So, you know, often they'll just be dosing things purely based off TSH, which in my opinion is almost one of the worst or, you know, least effective markers for actually directing what's going on with the thyroid. So often if you're writing a letter, for example, to an endocrinologist or a GP, I find if you can put a little bit of an explanation as to why you'd like something tested or why you'd like something trialed in their dosing, I think that goes a long way. We're lucky here that I guess we've developed some relationships with doctors and GPs that are a little bit more open to the things that we do. But I think there's nothing like, you know, meeting them in person and explaining some of the things that you know and I guess some of the case studies that you can share with them. But they'll often be very cautious and I guess try and pull rank in many ways. So it's just being respectful and mindful of their knowledge and really from the get-go talking to them about how you can work together as opposed to my way or your way.
What about providing research papers? Do you think that works, like helps to kind of support your case for having something tested or including something in the as a prescription?
I think definitely they will, you know, often come back to you if you say, oh, we'd like to test this, they'll say, well, there's no evidence for that. So if you can provide evidence, I think that's a really good thing to do. Definitely. Often in the letter, like I've got some pre-drafted letters which do have some references which I'll often direct them to, which I think does make a difference. So you can sort of prove that it is sort of research-based and not just something that you've come up with.
This was the final episode of season 3 of Between Clinical Minds. We've enjoyed talking to all of our experts and putting the season together for you. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Stay tuned for season 4. Thank you for listening. We hope this podcast engaged and empowered you. And thank you to all of our experts. You can read more information on each of them on our website, bioconceptsengage.com.au. If you enjoyed this episode of Between Clinical Minds, please refer a friend and share the love. To continue the conversation, you can contact us at bioconceptsengage.com.au, where community is more than a concept.